हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay. So on notes on the Bhagavat, this will be is the introduction for the Sandarbhas. Introduction. As the title says, this book is basically a short notes on the Srimad Bhagavatam, comprised of two parts. One, introducing the subject. In this section, the author describes what is the proper attitude to study the Bhagavatam by first explaining the difference between a true and a shallow critic. Then he discusses the reasons behind Bhagavatam being misunderstood by scholars and general populace. Finally, he describes how the absolute truth can be perceived by the study of Bhagavatam by citing from the book itself and clears the misconceptions pertaining to apparent mundane dealings of the Supreme Lord, Krishna. And then the second part, teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. In this section, the method of presentation of the teachings of Bhagavatam is discussed. First, the author gives succinct yet perfect explanation of the three features of the Absolute Truth and its three principal energies, then presents the entire Bhagavat philosophy in three divisions of relationship, sambandha, function, abhideya, and fruit, prayojana. The author conforms his presentation with that of the Sandarbhas, Satsandarbhas of Srila Jiva Goswami, and hence this work performs a perfect introduction to the study of the Sandarbhas. Part 1, introducing the subject. Yes.
What is the relation between Bhagavatam and the Sandarbhas?
The Sandarbhas is taking all the essential philosophy of the Bhagavatam and putting it in a thematic study. So then the six Sandarbhas, then the first, then the Tattva is establishing the, just the authority of the Vedic literatures, and of the Vedic literatures and the Puranas, and of the Puranas and the Bhagavatam. So it's establishing Bhagavatam as the supreme authority in the Vedic literatures. Then after that, he'll deal with the, you know, as we were saying, the Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So in Sambandha, you'll have then, I think, what do you have? Krishna Sandarbha,
Bhagavat
Sandarbha, Paramatma, Krishna, and then what's the fourth?
Third.
Okay, because that's the other one there. Three.
Tattva Sandarbha gives the introduction also.
Yeah, okay. Then you have Bhakti Sandarbha as the Abhideya.
Yes.
And
Preeti
Sandarbha as the Prayojana.
Okay.
So it's just taking Bhagavatam and studying it as Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana.
Okay.
But it's being studied, it's being presented in the form of Nyaya Prashtam, like that. So like the Vedanta Sutra. But Jiva Goswami always uses more words so it's easier to understand. Right? So he uses that system. Like you see so many times it's been coming up, and it makes things very clear like that. So it's just a thematic study of the Bhagavatam. So we've done the Siriyatam study, like that, where we've gone from the beginning, you know, the first canto all the way through the end of the 12th canto. Then we looked at it from the aspects of the Dasamul in the Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala. Then we're seeing is that we're again studying it by theme in the same Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana by Jiva Goswami Sandarbhas. So that way you get both. So that's the point of the course, because Prabhupada says you read the literature and then you study it. So the reading is the Siriyatam and the how you say, the study is the elucidatory, you know, the thematic, as they use these days. So both these together, then you get a very clear understanding. That's the idea. Because the point is it's supposed to be something that you use in your life. It's not, because we see here scholars and all that, they'll never understand it. If you're just reading it to know knowledge, you'll never actually understand Bhagavatam. It means it's impossible. It's not, because we're thinking that by intelligence we can know the unlimited, but our the amount of intelligence we have is limited. Right? The universe, there's the element of intelligence. Right? It's there. There's a certain volume of it in this universe. Right? That's able to be used by the living entities. And even though it's so much is there, whatever is necessary for all the living entities, that means we only have a portion of it. Right? And then whatever is being used by the living entities, then you have a layer of that around the universe. Because you have earth, fire, water, air, ether, mind, intelligent, ego, like that. So all that's around it. So that's all the extra stuff that, you know, just is the reserve, like that. Then that's only one universe, an unlimited universes, and that's all just when the Lord breathes in, it's just like that. So he's beyond. So to know unlimited from our limited volume of intelligence is actually a foolish proposition. But scholars, by the influence of the modes of nature, always think, means guaranteed, they will think they can understand anything by their intelligence. It's guaranteed. Just like dogs will bark and slobber, scholars will think they can understand everything. It's just the way it is. Mosquitoes bite, water's wet, you know, how you say, fire gives heat and light. Scholars will think they can understand everything by their intelligence. It's just, that's the way it is. Just like the karmi, he'll think that by fruit of work he'll be happy. No, it doesn't happen, but every fruit of worker will think that. So every jnani will think by his intelligence he can understand it. That's just how the modes of nature make everything. You know, so then that will be shown that it's not going to go, because they're only going to go when you study, all you can study intellectually is the secondary feature. Right? The primary feature of Krishna, that is only understood by Krishna revealing himself. Right? Krishna wants to reveal himself, but he only reveals himself through devotion. That's why the intellectual can't understand through just intelligence. Now, if they're using their intelligence to worship Krishna, like Krishna says in the Gita, then through that process they'll understand, but it's not because of their intelligence, it's because they've worshipped Krishna, and therefore Krishna's reciprocated. They've worshipped with intelligence, but someone worships with karma, they also get knowledge. Right? It's just that you perform karma, you get knowledge and detachment. They focus on knowledge and detachment. But you can get it by karma also. So it's bhakti is what reveals Krishna. That's the only thing. There isn't anything else that can reveal Krishna. Doesn't matter how smart we think they are and all that. It absolutely doesn't matter. I mean, really, just doesn't matter. And many of the time in the material platform, the smarter you think you are, the less you actually know. Right? Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, you were going down the street, you're lost, you don't know where to go. Right? Now, let us say you have a nuclear physicist standing there, and you have a businessman in a suit, and you want to ask someone where to go, where, how do you get to the place? Who do you ask of those two? Businessman. You'll never ask a nuclear physicist. He probably doesn't even know where he is. You know, he'll go, well, let's see, where are we now? Okay, well, okay, this is this, then we're... He'll have to calculate a whole intellectual thing. So that's the whole thing. It's they're unable to apply their knowledge in their life. So that's the weakness. And so that's the difference of the scholarship, you could say, in the Vaishnav line, is that it's about the practical application. So if you're not trying to practically apply it, you're not taking advantage of the knowledge that's gained. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why everything moves through in a very you know, how you say, in a at the speed that it's understood. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if you're looking at the intellectual point, there has to be a certain number of pages or chapters or, you know, points made in every lesson, right? That's what you have in the modern karmic world, that the basically the understanding is how much time you're going to spend in the class is how much time you have to prepare for the class. So they have this whole thing, they have it all on the board, they have it all here, the people have all the printouts, they have, you know, whatever medium they're using to express that, and they have to get through that. So people have questions, you know, and one question went too long, that's it for questions, because the time's up. So it's not about actually understanding, it's just about retaining information. So if you can quote information, if you can do the parrot thing, then you're considered, you know, a good academic. Sadly. Yeah, yeah. It's just like, let's say in the factory, the guy knows how to tighten the nuts and bolts to the right thing, and that's, and then he's perfect. He doesn't have to understand it. He doesn't have to know what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, in the business world, as long as you can go and make the contract and make the connection and all that, you don't have to understand how the business is working. You just have to be able to work for the businessman. Does that make sense? So the difficulty is the intellectuals, they only have to memorize what's there in their particular area of interest. So that's the liberalness of the academy, is that you can apply your intellectual prowess in whatever area you want. But the point is it's just about memorizing facts. Because as soon as you say this is the way it is, then you're not respected in the academy, because then you stop being a mental speculator. So that's the point. Krishna cannot be approached through mental speculation. Through bhakti, yes, but through mental speculation, no. So that has to be established nicely, yes.
We say that Sandharva is based on Bhagavatam.
Yes.
And that's our main book as a sampradaya.
Yes, yes.
But if we take, for example, another sampradaya, Vaishnava sampradaya, would they view Sandharvas also through Bhagavatam?
Oh, that's the only way. I mean, they're written based on Bhagavatam, so that's the only way that they would be able to look at them. You know, because it's based on that, the example is given. So they won't have a problem with that. It means if they study the Sandharvas, then, you know, they'll look at it from the Bhagavatam, you know, using the Bhagavatam as the reference. So for them it's not a problem, because it's already, it has all the references itself, so you can read it on its own. Like that. And they do read it. They do read the Sandharvas. Like that. It's just because it's the most intellectual, how you could say, it's the most intellectual writing that there is. Yeah, I think we can just stop there. Like that. So they appreciate it. When Prabhupada says that Jiva Goswami is the foremost scholar in the, you know, the, well, I'm not sure if he says modern or contemporary age. So if we look at modern means not Vedic. So for us, we're starting back, you know, with the intellectuals in Greece. So that means for the last 3,000 years from there to now, he is the scholar amongst them. Right? He's the foremost. And then within the Vedic, then he's the foremost. So when you say the modern age, means within this time period. So there isn't a greater scholar than Jiva Goswami. It's not because he's our line, he is the scholar. The other sampradayas also accept like that. Whether they'll articulate it like that, but, you know, as we mentioned, one Sri Vaishnav scholar, he mentioned that that the mental speculators, they take the Sanskrit and they juggle the words by grammar, you know, because endings, some of the endings are the same in different grammatical positions, you know, the different kinds of nouns, so they'll switch those. They'll move things around. They'll try to get another meaning from the text. So then, And he was saying that even with Ramanujacharya's writings, you can do that. You can mix it around and get a different meaning. But he said, Jiva Goswami said, it doesn't matter what you do, how you juggle it, how you adjust it around, it'll always mean the same thing. You know? And this is a scholar of, a respected scholar of the Sri Sampradaya. You know, so this wasn't just somebody. He used to write the magazine, I don't know if it's still running, called Sudarshan. I don't know, anyone knows that? No? It was like their intellectual journal. So it's just, you know, it's like they're being real, they know. You know? Is if they have an agenda, that's another thing. Like the Germans, the scholars, I think it was in, they first came across, I think, 1718, or late 1700s, early 1800s, across the Sanskrit literatures. They understood that this is the superior language, the original language. And so it went like that until the British wanted to establish that they're superior to the Indians. Right? Then with the whole thing with Max Müller and all those guys, then they tried to make it look like, you know, the Western culture is the superior, and then India is a derivative of that. You know, you had that whole Aryan invasion and all these kind of things, that it was Europeans that went over there. Right? I mean, so you go back in time, you have these flourishing cultures over on this side, and you have, you know, the Europeans sitting in their caves and, you know, like that. Of course, we can say is that they were ahead of their time because they were, how you say, if you go back on the walls, Neanderthal, they were using emojis and all that kind of thing, so they were on the cutting edge and all that. So technology hadn't caught up to them yet. They were really, you know, forward thinkers or something like that.
Succinct writers.
Yes, very succinct and that.
Like any book can be divided in these three categories, Samandha, Abhidhya, and Pravachana, just as we have for the Sandarbhas also.
Can any book be?
Any book be in the categories?
Well, how do you mean by categorized?
Like it is a Chaitanya Charitamrit, then in that we can say that there are these many. Text that call in the Sambandha, these Abhidaya and these Prayojana.
Means you can, but what's your purpose in doing that?
Because then one is the sitting and the other is the study part. You know, then we are going to go deeper into it. This is Bhagavad Gita and Rishimala also, on the basis of Dashmi, we are able to understand it much better, you know. So it helps in a better understanding.
Yeah. Means I don't understand the context. Means are you going to be doing that, or why were we discussing that? This has already been done here, and we're studying this.
Yeah, because one person had asked me for CC, do we have it like that? He said, I have no idea regarding that.
The point is the Lord Chaitanya makes the point that only three topics are discussed in the Vedic literature, Sambandha, Abhidaya, and Prayojana. Mm-hmm. So it means that's all there is in anything. Now, whether you can take the book and say, you know, this first part is this, the second part is this, the third part is this, that's another thing. But the points being made can always be put into those categories.
Because we were trying to relate, you know, Sambandha with Adi and Madhya and Antilila, that way that kind of stuff. I said, no idea regarding that.
It means the point is it has to be something natural, just like it's pointed out by pointed out by Srila Prabhupada. I think Jiva Goswami makes the point also, is that the 10 topics of Bhagavatam, you don't try to establish it by canto. Yes. These are the topics that are being discussed. And so where they apply, they apply. You might find that there's more aspects of one in one place and more aspects than another. But the difficulty is if you're approaching it simply by the scholarship aspect, it won't be appreciated, because it means, you could say, in the earlier part of the Bhagavatam, you're establishing these points of Sambandha. But we see when we get to 11th canto that the same exact points are put, the same technical points, but the flavor of it is showing the actual essence of it. Well, it was already discussed before. So that's the difficulty, is that to be able to put them together like that, that's why we rely on the acharyas. So if the acharyas have put something together like that, that's what we use. We generally try to avoid using our own systems. So that's why then we use those systems given by the acharyas. Because, you know, it's just like the verses in Bhagavad Arkamrichimala. When we see them on their own, we wouldn't necessarily see them in the context that Bhaktivinoda Thakur presented them. But when he presents it, then we start to, how you say? Then it starts to make sense. Yeah? Does that work? So in other words, people ask these things, just say, I don't know. Yeah. Part 1, introducing the subject. The fruitless reader and the shallow critic. Most readers are mere repositories of facts and statements made by other people. That's what I mean. And so the person has the most facts, the greater the repository, then the greater he is. I mean, sometimes you hear about people, big scholars, they're called walking encyclopedias.
Yes.
They may not actually be able to apply any of that, you know, practically, but they're called walking inside because they just know so many facts. Yeah. And there's statements made by other people. What statements they have, there's not necessarily any. But this is not study, right? The student is to read the facts with a view to create and not with the object of fruitless retention. Right? You have to do something with it. Right? Does that make sense? Now, you'll notice here is that this presentation is Bhaktivinoda Thakur is presenting it for the person who considers themselves intellectual. And it works for both the Vedic scholars, you know, and for the contemporary scholars. But you'll notice is that in that he doesn't present anything as issues. Because that's temporary. Right? Because if you're presenting the absolute truth, it still has to be presented on the absolute platform. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's why one has to be very, very careful, is that in one's presentation, you have to stick to what is the absolute truth. You may use wordings and how you put the sentences together that will be appreciated by such categories of people. But it can't be that you adjust things for issues. Because issues are temporary. Issues are created by the modes of nature. People will think, I've done this. I'm the doer. The same way they think that I have created these particular social platitudes. When they actually haven't. Just the modes of nature bring it up. You know? Does that make sense? So it's a matter of Krishna's modes. It's not a matter of people themselves. So that's why then you're presenting it in a flavor that they can appreciate, but it still has to retain the actual point of being the absolute truth. Right? So you see here, he's very expert in that. In fact, he's the first one that brought it across from just addressing Vedic scholars into addressing, you know, the Western mentality. Thank God. Students like satellites should reflect whatever light they receive from authors and not imprison the facts and thoughts. Right? It means they reflect them. They get the knowledge and it should be able to something that can be used for others. It can illuminate things around, right? Because if you have a light, the light's coming on, say you have a mirror, the mirror will illuminate other objects.
There is a need to be Krishna conscious.
Yes, you have to be Krishna conscious. And here he's just showing the logical point of just how, means that's the thing, is he can even present our philosophy so it just looks like logic.
Yes.
And the person who identifies himself as logical can be convinced.
Yes.
And if they can't, it just means they don't want to. Okay.
Yes.
So point is, it's not that we can't do that. But we have to understand this is the point that he'll get to. Because then logically he'll just go through like that until he eventually gets to that. Right? But we see is that from the Bhagavatam, because that's a process, but the Bhagavatam is like each verse, it'll show you how it connects to Krishna, otherwise we get lost.
Yes.
So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is taking those who are lost and trying to bring them to, you know, where they can function. Right? Thought is progressive, right? Because your thinking is supposed to move forward, right? But when you say thought is progressive, what do you think? It goes back to your own issues. Yeah, we're moving forward, we're doing this and that, and you know? But actually progressive means that you as a soul are progressing in your consciousness going back to Godhead. You know? And at least if minimum you're materialist, you're going from, you know, being a self-centered immoralist to being a, you know, how you say, a sophisticated self-centered immoralist to being a self-centered moralist. You know, who doesn't believe in the Lord, one who accepts that God is useful in that, to one who accepts the theistic approach that there is, but they still have a mundane concept of God. Because God is just, part of the process of morality. It's one of the considerations. Like that. Two, where then it's about, you know, then you're considering more seriously the soul and all that, but it has to come to the point where it's actually about the theism. And the morality is about pleasing God. So that's called bhakti. So that elevation is to get you to that point. Right? So you may use the technique to show that logical progression. But you always have to have in mind that it's about bhakti is why you're there. That's why you see it'll get there. Because that's what you want to do. Does that make sense? Yeah? The author's thought must have progress in the reader in the shape of correction or development. Right? If something's wrong, you bring it to the correct, and then what's correct, then you show how to develop it. He is the best critic who can show the further development of an old thought. But a mere denouncer is the enemy of progress and consequently of nature. Right? So he's shown is that it's not just the facts. Facts have to be used for progress. Right? And you have to be able to illuminate those. You have to be able to show others how that is there. You know, so that means you are doing it yourself. Then he's the best critic and show further development of an old thought. So the thought is there, how to take it further. That's the actual critic. Right? Not the one who denounces. Like nowadays, the thought you're a critic means you find fault. No. A critic means you find what's the best way to apply something, right? Because that's most likely people are taking the knowledge and not applying it properly. So someone's reading the Bhagavatam, not applying it properly. So the criticism is not about the Bhagavatam or about the methods. And it's not even about that the person is trying to use it. It's about how they're using it to bring it to the correct form so that they actually get the results. So you're encouraging the whole thing. You're just showing that if you want this result, so you have to be able to show the result, this is what you have to do. It means a result comes from certain mechanics. The mechanics being applied wrong, you won't get the right result. Yeah. So that's how it works. Right? So now he's quoting from these denouncer, right? Begin anew. Because the old masonry does not answer at present. Let the old author be buried because his name is gone, says the critic.
His time is gone.
Huh?
His time is gone,
says the critic. Right? So we see this is very, very popular. It means you go back in history. Paul did that with Christianity. Right? He appreciates what Jesus is saying, that he's bringing some forward thinking in the religious process, but in doing so, he's one of these kind of critics that he denounces, therefore, the whole religious process and tradition and authority that Jesus was basing all his teachings on. Does that make sense? So, he's accepting the so-called the teachings, but not the person. So, in other words, what Jesus has to say is nice, but him as a person, his practice and lifestyle, and what he values is not important. So all that's thrown out. So you see, as with each time it comes along, anything that's there, there's something wrong, then the denouncer throws everything out and starts again. Right? There's nothing here we can work with. So therefore, they have to start all over. That means you don't really know what you're doing. It means literally, you may be really smart. Yes?
Can we say that this is not a philosophical but a sentimental approach?
Because sentimental,
we,
no, yeah.
Because we base it on our feelings.
Yes, it's based on feelings. It's based on feelings. It's based on feelings. It's based on pride that your technique, your ability, your understanding is more. So yeah, it's just that. Yes, it's mundane. It's not. It doesn't have much of a. It's not. You're not dealing with the absolute truth. You're not using the absolute truth. Remember hearing about one cook. He was famous in South India. And, you know, all the other, because there's so many good cooks, and they'd all be cooking, and especially in the marriage season, they're cooking for, you know, some big marriage. And when you're cooking for a marriage, you're cooking for thousands of people. You know, you're not cooking a small amount. And generally, when you're cooking for a wedding, it's going to be, you know, fancy, right? So it's high-grade ingredients and all that. So it's very expensive. So you can't afford to make a mistake. So occasionally when these big chefs would make a mistake, so you have a preparation for, you know, 2,000 people that's not good, they would call in this chef. He would come, he'd look at it and this and that, and when he was convinced it wasn't like totally ruined, you know, then he would look at it, and then he would tell him, okay, I can do something with this, but everybody has to leave. All the cooks, everybody's got to go. And then he'll do something, and he'll come out, and then he'll be finished, and he'll give it some new name. Like that. Who knows what he did to it, but, you know. There are techniques like that. So the point is they know what's there and they can see what's useful. And what's useful, they'll keep that and they'll do some adjustments. And what's not, then they'll adjust that. But this idea of one thing's wrong, it's all wrong. It's actually an extremely immature position. And absolutely popular. Right? Because one thing's wrong, throw it all out. And then, you know, you just create another problem. So you see, in the economic, the political, the educational, they all do this. And like in, you're saying in English, then the method of learning to read for the children, that was basically officially kind of thrown out in the early 1800s. They have not found a good way to teach kids how to read since. So 200 years now they're fighting over, is it linguistic, is it phonetic, is it this, is it that? And they come up with a little bit better system, and then someone else will turn that over. You know what I'm saying? So it's just the modes of nature. So that's what we're meaning here. Begin anew, right? Because it doesn't... you can always work with it. That's the point, is you see what's there, what's the essence, and work with that. Right? That makes sense? So that's what's there. So you have to. So that means you have to be intelligent enough and trained enough to be able to see what is of value. Because if you don't see anything of value, that means you don't have anything of value to offer. Does that make sense? If you don't have any aesthetic sense, you cannot see aesthetics. So if you don't see anything of any value in anything, that means you yourself don't actually have any real value. Like Duryodhana, he could not find one good person because all he was just a cynic. It was just about himself. So what wasn't about himself wasn't of value. Does that make sense? So that's the reality of what we're dealing with. So now the whole point is that just finding that is a fault and throwing that all out. No, it's what can be used from there. You know, it's just like we were saying, is that, let's say, the person has graduated, you know, got good marks, they go with their resume to some business opportunity, you know, and so they go for the interview. So now, the people who are taking the interview, they have their degree in this, and they put in their years and their this and that. The guys at the thing generally couldn't care less about your degree, because it basically doesn't mean anything, right? But what they're caring about is that you were able to put in 4 years with focus and get good marks. That's what they're looking at. So that's why they set a standard. Only people with this much can come to apply. That's because they want a standard of focus. But at the interview, then they'll see actually how real that is in your life, how much you're able to focus it in other things. Right? That's what they'll see. Because when it comes down to it, you have so many people with exactly the same qualifications. 100 people apply. They all basically have the same qualification. You choose based on the individual, the person. Does that make sense? So that's what you're looking for. So the whole point is, as you can see, is that what qualifications are there, what focus is there, what endeavor that there, what value is there. And from that, that's where you work. This is where preaching happens. Right? That's how Bhaktivinoda Thakur is able to take individuals who are thoroughly absorbed in their contemporary identities in the Western culture and make them interested in the Vedic. Right? Because he's able to see what it is there that they are valuing. Just like that, there's that example of Srila Prabhupada, when he's talking with, I think, Stirling Moss or Graham Hill or one of those English Formula One racers. So he was talking with them, and because he's English, and in India was English, and so you had the English cars there, and so started talking about some classic cars. Because generally, if you're into Formula One racing, you like cars, and generally you appreciate classic cars, you know, like that. So they were talking about this, and Prabhupada had this one, he had it for so many years, and this and that. And he went going bantering back and forth like this. Then at some point he asked him about his racing, and when he's racing, he's going so fast and all that, does he ever feel afraid? He said, yes, and then Prabhupada asked, so what do you do when you feel fear? You know, and then from there they went into a discussion about God consciousness. You understand? So he just sees what his area, his focus is, what he does good, like that. And so what things come up. But now, can you see this if you don't have compassion for others? Right? Because if you don't have compassion, you don't care for others, so you can't notice what they might go through. Does that make sense? The self-centered person can't understand that others are suffering, trying to take care of them. So you have to have that ability to appreciate others. Then you can see what elements to use. You understand? Mm-hmm. So in the modern concept of soft preaching, we're just using what value systems we can relate to of what's going around in the modern. And hopefully then that person, relates to that. And generally if you go to specific places, you can find those people. But it's not that you've seen the quality in the person. You're just using your own qualities. So we see here is that what we see in Bhagavatam, the preaching, is that these great personalities, because of their compassion, right, jiva-doya, that's what we're going to see when we get into Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya says there's only two things. Nama-ruchi, jiva-doya. A taste for the name and compassion for the living entities.
Right? Vaishnava Seva, so three he's mentioned.
Oh, okay, so another place he mentions three. Vaishnava Seva. So, that's how you're going to get the ruchi. And that you have it, then you give to others. Okay. So then, that's then why they're preaching. That's the preaching. That's why it's not hard, it's not soft. It's just preaching. Because they get to the essence. So that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about here. But his presentation is on that intellectual platform of the scholars and reformists and, all these kind of people that want to do all this kind of jazz.
Yeah, like generally we see in the modern academy, if you want to kind of make other person feel comfortable, you should be empathic listener and all. Mm-hmm. But the person who does
actually they just act they are listening, but they speak what they want. After a few times, you can know this person will give this kind of answer. That's it.
Yeah,
they are not like
that. Empathic person will always use the same empathy. They'll talk about their kittens or about the dolphins. It'll always be the same. Yes, yes. That's the whole difficulty, because I'm only relating to it because it's an issue I can relate to. But the preaching is the preacher has no issues, because everything is covered by devotional service. There isn't anything outside of devotional service. And they have that faith that by performing devotional service, whatever benefit can be gained is gained in from that way. That's how it comes. Krishna's pleased, everything happens. Krishna's not pleased, nothing happens. That's just how it works. Even if you're working on the platform of karma, you still have to please Krishna with your performance of karma according to the rules that he gives. Two, he'll give you the results of the karma. You're still pleasing Krishna. It's still about bhakti. So when we have faith that bhakti is the only thing that works, including even in karma and jnana, even we have those attachments, it's still only through bhakti. That person then has no issues. So therefore, if you're dealing with another living entity, you just become aware of what are their issues, what are they dealing with, what's valuable to them. Right? Everything's Krishna. So one can appreciate that. Then it's specific to the individual. Right? Krishna says, then he is all the... Whatever is of value in this world is not connected to him, it's useless. So what are you trying to do? Connect their value. Right? So therefore, then in that value, you use certain language, as we see Bhaktivinoda Thakur is here. Right? So this would be back in the, you know, mid-18 or late 1800s. Right? What was very prominent at that time? Right? All these big writers and scholars and, you know, all your Shaw and Longfellow and, you know, all these guys, you know, whatever. It's a big time of like that. As it gets farther than the Huesistic. What do you call it? The Golden Age? What do you call it? Something epoch?
Enlightenment?
Yeah, no, but after, in the 1800s, it's a Belle Epoch.
Belle Epoch.
Yeah, it means the Golden Age, because everyone is into this intellectual and all this and kind of stuff like this. And so he's addressing that crowd. So he's using this language. Nowadays, most people won't even understand what he's talking about here, because before the common man, this was standard language. And now it's like only if you've read old literature, you understand what's going on here. Right? So we see Srila Prabhupada then for now. But the approach is exactly the same. All you're doing is, what is the flavor? You're adjusting to that. It's not about the externals. That's the externals through which they're identifying. The soul identifies themselves as the external. Therefore, you're approaching that soul through that external. It's just like a little kid. And he's dressed himself up and, you know, like whatever he's dressed up as. That's how you deal with them. You know? They would feel upset if you didn't deal with them like that.
I was thinking that point was made during Gaura Purnima festival is that Mahaprabhu, he preached by his own example mainly.
Yes.
But nowadays devotees are very much concerned how to repack the philosophy. It's all about repackaging. You know, we have to do this or we have to do that and how it's going to work and this and that. But if you preach by example,
yes,
then it will always work.
It'll always work. Because otherwise, where would the concept of packaging come from?
Logistics. Where?
Logistics, okay. That means who's worried about these logistics?
The businessmen.
The economic community is the one who's taken this to the, you know, the greatest... you know, pinnacle of development. It's just like you have something that's there, ordinary stuff, you know, let's say like Dettol, right? Really ordinary. You change the packing, And now it becomes interesting. The four is like, who uses that stuff? You change that, make it a nice shiny packet. Oh, wow. You know, it's like when you go on the shelf, there's 20 different varieties. You wouldn't know what they are. You look at the one that has the nicest package. You know, because if it's that, they must be good. You know? So.
It's a one approach.
Yeah. So. I mean, part of the packaging is the pricing also. How you say? One for 150, two for four rupees. That's a very modern approach. Because people always take it that if you buy more, it's automatically cheaper. And so they raise the price on the bigger stuff. It's cheaper many times to buy a bunch of small stuff. Because people, they know people think like that. So. Yeah, so then that's coming from there. But okay, you're selling it, but the point is once the businessman sells it, does he care? No. But now let's say you're looking at governance. That they have a principle that they're trying to sell. Do they expect you to do it? Yes. Right? And the intellectual also, they're making a point, so that's the way you think, how you view, how you... The government doesn't care how you think as long as you do it. The intellectual wants you to think like that, so you naturally do that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then on the bottom of the pile, you just are able to express how you think. Like that. So that's the whole point, is it's not a matter of packaging. It's a matter of, if you're sincere, that is the packaging. People see that. You know, it's just like, okay, you're in the airport, you see a family, right? You're too far away, you can't understand what they're talking about. But you see how they behave, how they deal with the child, how they... You know, it's just like, okay, the child's there, is making some trouble, right? The parent comes along, grabs him by one arm, and kind of drags them along, you know, over to the side so they're not making any trouble. Okay, or someone else comes along and picks them up with both hands, you know, or even puts them, you know, up and then starts talking.
Yes.
What's the effect?
Very different.
Very different. Yes. So it's like what you're saying. It's just, you just behave in that way, and then naturally people are going to catch that. Because for them, it's not... The externals may be there, but the point is it's the finer principles behind that. Doesn't matter what you're wearing, as long as you're wearing it nicely. Right? Even if you're wearing a suit, but you're wearing it badly, let's say they're shabbily dressed. It may be an Armani suit, but it's still considered shabby. Things don't match, things don't, you know, that. And so they just see whatever you're wearing, it's just as it's done, so it's the character. That's the actual thing. So like you're saying, the example is there. Then, when having the proper example, then when you speak, you see the nature of the person and try to adjust it for their mentality. But you're always speaking the absolute truth. You know, so you're not hiding what you're saying by not saying it. You're just using words in which they themselves will not react negatively to. Set?
Yeah.
Yeah. Any sense? So you see the approach that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is using. Because that means you have to be able to get to the essence. Like that. Did that come up in the discussion here the other day? Oh no, someone was telling about it. That, I think it was in the... What years would it have been? Yeah, I'm not sure. It would have been in the 70s. Sometime... That in Los Angeles, all the senior kind of leaders were there in Los Angeles. You know, that was kind of like the seat that went, you know, where Prabhupada developed things, the deity worship and so many different aspects, book distribution and all that. And I think the BBT was there, the artists were there. You know, it was all happening there. And so then something came up. I'm not sure what it was, but most likely it was Fifth Canto or something. And so then all the senior devotees are there, and they're talking to Prabhupada, how we'll get, you know, we're out distributing these books, how we'll convince people of this? This is so wild, we have to adjust this. Prabhupada's point is, no, that's the Shastra, we don't adjust it. you know, no, but people won't buy it. No. So they're only talking about the secondary. Mm. There was no discussion about the primary. So we have to always be very, very careful. It's the primary that attracts their attention, because secondary, it's all like it's just repackaging old stuff. It just keeps moving around in a circle, and people know that's what goes on, right? Common person knows about the rat race, about this. Anybody who's, they all know it's useless. They're looking for some taste. So if you can show them that taste, that difference in approach, that's what will catch your attention, not the secondary form. Because if you act in a cultured way, like we're talking about, then naturally it'll work. A gentleman can deal with anyone. So
I'm thinking this is purely Christian conception, is that by voting we can change Shastra.
Yes.
Because in Asia and Middle East, it's not people might not understand what's written in their scripture.
Right.
But they would never change it.
Yeah, that's true.
But Christianity, they just come together and then...
Okay, yeah, they have a meeting. They always have
edited
a meeting.
Now.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And even you say it's you know, they moved on and all that, there are branches of the Protestants who go back to the earlier meetings. They'll accept everything in Christianity from the second meeting back.
Yes, yes.
They won't accept from the third.
Yes.
Or they'll accept the third, but not from the fourth.
Yes, yes.
Even though I think, I'm not sure what ecumenical council they've had most recently. Like fifth, maybe? Something. But, you know, just... so. And it's present-day people who are functioning. So, yes, it seems to be a Christian thing. Yeah, because the East Orthodox won't do that.
Like, Jews never change.
No,
Muslims
no,
never change.
No, like that. Yeah, just no one changes. Yeah. So what to do? But they're the ones who are addressing, because they have the pride to think that they know better. So they're the ones that the first world thinks that they are the world, even though they're the smallest group of people. Like that. You know, you can say, but they're the most successful. But you know. There's history of that. Where did their investment come from? It didn't come from their place. Right? You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. It didn't come from their place. Let the old author be buried because his time is gone, says the critic. These are shallow expressions. So it's very important to know is these aren't intellectual, they're very shallow. They may be using the intellectual process, but they're very shallow in their approach. So we're trying to go deep. Right?
But there's no respect for the authority versus,
no, there's no respect for authority because they think they're authority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why it means we look at, okay, if you have, let's say, someone from this kind of intellectual background, you respect them for their intellect, because they have, and you can present things in a logical, intellectual way,
mm-hmm.
and using nice words, and they'll appreciate that approach. But you still have to establish Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't go up and go, yo, teach. You know, that's not going to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes. Progress is certainly the law of nature, and there must be corrections and developments with the progress of time. Because the modes of nature are there, things adjust. You develop. It's not a problem that you develop. You know? But the point is, it's the mode of nature, because it'll develop and it can disappear. The Greeks are known as, you know, a pinnacle of philosophy and architecture, language, and it means everything in all aspects. But something happened. And then for 200 years, it was called the Dark Ages.
Mm-hmm.
There was just nothing culturally happening. I mean, zero. And then slowly it starts to build up again. You know, so when you're looking at something over thousands of years, then, you know, you can say, it's okay, in these 200 years is this, and here was good, and there was that. And, you know? But it's just like that, just the modes of nature come, and then it just shifts. And then at one point it starts to shift over to the Romans, then it's just the Romans, and then the Romans disappear. Right? you know, great pasta, great shoes, you know, like that. Some good suits, like that. And then, you know, Hari Bal. You know, it just changes. Before they were the world. They were the Holy Roman Empire. And then it disappears. So that's the point is that it will always move forward if you follow the laws of nature. That's why he says, enemy of progress and consequently of nature. Because nature's natural thing is progress. It's always development. It's always variety. Refining. That's just how Krishna's energy works. Right? It's unlimitedly developing. So it happens, but you have to do that in connection with Krishna. If you do it not connected to Krishna, it will be lost. If you do it in connection to Krishna, then you have something solid. Right? Even if the thing itself is lost, the effect of it remains. Right? Like let's say you lose the business, but you still have all the money. It's not a problem. But when you're not connected to Krishna, you lose the business and the money. It's just gone.
Lamentation.
Yeah, that's it. But progress means going further or rising higher, right? Not going down. Now, if we are to follow our foolish critic, we must go back to our former terminus and make a new race. It means wherever they will say you have to go back to a certain point in time. We'll have to go to there. And then from there we'll move forward. So depending upon them, so like the anarchists, you have to go back to zero. You know, get rid of all the people, get rid of everything. You know, just leave the animals, and the butterflies, and then the world would be a better place. And yeah, probably if you got rid of them, it would be a better place. But so that's the difficulty is that people want to go back to a certain thing, and you think, no, we have to go back to what's before. It's not moving forward. You understand? It's always going back. Get rid of this guy, go back, and then we go forward. Does that make sense? So it's not that what worked back will work now. So it's not about going back, it's about applying what works to the present. Otherwise, you have to work to go back. And what method are you going to use to go back that'll be successful? You know what I'm saying? French tried it, cut off everybody's head. You know, that definitely set things back a bit. Yeah. whether it was the terminus they were looking for, you know. America, they just toss all the sea into the ocean, like that, you know. So, like that, you know, you could drink that tea. But no, they throw it in the ocean. Somehow or another, that'll make everything better. You know, so it's just, everybody has this idea, so you just get rid of everything, destroy, then go, then start, let's just say, start anew. Okay, now if we are to follow our foolish critic, we are to go back to our former terminus and make a new race. And when we have run half the race, another critic of his stamp will cry out, begin anew to go over the whole road and see what is in the other terminus. Right? So then they'll go, no, we're going to go back and then go see over there. No. So that's the whole point. Instead of moving forward from the position that they're at, they always say you have to go back.
Because when you go back, then you can see the movements. Because when you go back, then you can only see the movements. Otherwise, you don't see.
No, but the point is that in their minds. But the point is, if seeing the movements that was actually effective, then why are they in the position they're in now? Because they were on that path, so-called what they consider as good. But by going on that path, they still ended up at a place that they say is wrong. So what is being pointed out is that you're getting to the essence. The essence is you know what is the actual purpose of everything. So even if you're off at this point, what's the essence of your position you're in? Even though it's off, what's the essence? And then from there, following that essence, you move it forward. You know what I'm saying? That's why we're not worried about prayaschitta, retribution. Because those won't do anything. Only Krishna consciousness. You add Krishna consciousness. There's something wrong, then you add Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. You know, it's just like you say, oh, we'll do this, toss them out, we'll set an example. Yeah, so what example have you set? You do anything wrong, you'll be tossed out. Okay? That's there. Okay, nice. But the only problem is every action perfect? Or Krishna says every action is covered by fault. So that means anything you do can get you thrown out. Right? So, therefore, then you either do nothing, go off and just do your own thing, or you have to hide anything, any fault that's there. Right? And how does this go for, if we're talking about Jiva Doya, how is this, do one consider that this is a position of security, that leadership cares? No, because if you do anything wrong, you'll be tossed out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we see in the French Revolution, then Robespierre's leading it, but at some point they cut off his head. I'm not sure what it was that he did to displease them. You know, everyone only got 1.5 loaves of bread instead of 2 or something. Whatever it was something that they cut off his head. And basically, when they ran out of heads, then revolution's over. Now what to do, right? Because now anybody who could lead is dead, right?
Now we discuss.
Huh?
Now we discuss. We have heads.
Yeah, that's like that. But then the fun part is while they're sitting there discussing, this little short guy comes along and takes over. And they couldn't get him. He was too short to fit on the guillotine. So, you know, like that, you know. You know, so it worked. But there's always that problem. It's that there's no plan. We think, no, we had this one place, and when it was the temple president, something came up, there was some dissatisfaction. So then the leadership came together, they got rid of the temple president. And they're all thinking, okay, that went well, that went smooth, this and that, and they're all patting each other on the back. And then somebody pointed out, there is no president. Now who's going to be the president? It's like, oh. And then they had to sit down and work that out. So it wasn't that there was a positive thing. Is that you're there? Is there anything that can be used? Okay, now if he's a good leader in some area, someone else is something else. So add to that and then, you know what I'm saying? You know, or like I gave the example, the temple president, the devotees are enthusiastic, wonderful mood, so much, nice community, everybody's enthusiastic. But the guy's terrible with finances. So then the temple was, you know, down a serious amount of money. So then they get rid of him as the president, bring in a guy who's good at collecting. So he pays off the debt, but then as far as the community of being a dynamic and wonderful community, that's, you know, you can read about it in history, like that. So instead of taking it, he deals with that and develops him, and someone else then just deals with the finance side. Then it works. But this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying. You just get rid of it and then start all over again.
Yeah. So, a lot of maturity in Krishna consciousness.
Yes, well, that's the whole point. That's why we're at this point, and you know, it's considered if you're working on a doctorate degree, then you expect a little maturity. Okay, begin anew because the wrong road has been taken. In this way, our stupid critics will never allow us to go over the whole road and see what is in the other terminus. Right? You're starting at one point, you go down this. They say, no, that's wrong, go back, then take a different road. But then you'll never get to that terminus either. Then they'll say, no, this is wrong. Because it's all on secondary. They're not checking what's going on in the primary. Is the primary developing? Okay. Thus, the shallow critic and the fruitless reader are two great enemies of progress. We must shun them. Right? So, Sanskrit terms for this is called niyamagraha. Right? Because they won't move forward. Right? The fruitless reader, they read, it doesn't matter how much they read, they never move forward. So they stay on one platform. The prominent thing is, niyamagraha means you do not progress. Whatever level you're at, you stay there. So one doesn't go because he doesn't apply it. He doesn't think. The other one thinks, But they'll always start over again, so they never progress either. So one throws everything out because they don't understand, and one follows but doesn't understand. So neither progress. So does that make sense? So that verse that Rupa Goswami gives about Niyamagraha. So all this was spent, Bhaktivinoda Thakura explained this to, you know, contemporary intellectuals. It's the same thing. You understand? He didn't change. It's the same principle that he's explaining. But he explains it in a way that they can appreciate it. That's why we follow the Acharyas. They know how to do this. Then we see from there, and then by practicing, then you can start to apply it. But this is what we're looking for. The true critic and the useful reader, right? So The true critic, on the other hand, advises us to preserve what we've already obtained and to adjust our race from the point where we have arrived in the heat of our progress, right? So let's say you started at, you know, on the path, okay? Then going that, you're off by 5 degrees. So now you go down some distance, and that's a little bit of a distance. From that 5 degrees off position, now you point that at the goal. You understand? You don't say we have to go back. You don't say we have to go sideways. You go forward from that place. Does that make sense?
But so that now the goal must be clear.
That's why Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam makes the goal clear. It's about serving Krishna. It's about pure devotional service. From there, anything goes. That devotees are talking about that we should develop motive goodness or develop good character or our presentation or the packaging or all that must be improved. Now, we are getting it from the contemporary environment. And in using it, we're doubting the tradition. Right? So the position is wrong. Right? But, according to this, the true critic preserve what we've already obtained. Now that they are aware of their own, how they present themselves, how they deal, the culture, how they're interacting with others, that's a good thing. Because they'll critique those from going back in time that they didn't do that. They may have had the faith and all that, but they didn't worry about others. So then, in worrying about others, now the problem is they'll give up that firm faith. Yes. But the point is what's saying, no, that firm faith in those people should be kept. Now add into that refinement. Because if you're a devotee, develops all good qualities, so why wouldn't they be there? In other words, the opportunity's there, we're just not taking it. Opportunity's there to consider others, but we say, no, it's just for Krishna, or I'm being practical. Right? Does that make sense? So, like that. So then, that's tossed out, and then this new touchy-feely, nice, you know, be the nice guy, you know, how you say, suridam sarva bhutanam, you know, that kind of thing, is there. But then we could say, that's wrong, you know. But the point is that they're considerate of others, that's the good part. That it's not based on that determined faith, that exclusive faith in Krishna and bhakti. That's where the weakness is. So, to this, you just add the bhakti part. And that clear. To the previous one, you just add that refinement, the culture, because Vaishnava etiquette is there. So if you check, any time that they would say it's too rough, because they weren't following the etiquette. Right? You know? And so that's what you're doing. So the one is, they have the philosophy, they have the faith in that, but the religious process, it's exclusively about bhakti, but it doesn't extend much beyond that they include any kind of religious process. So it's weak. So seeing that, then the tendency is you throw out that philosophical kind of position, and you'll just take the religious. But if you're going to throw out the philosophy, it means you throw out authority, it means you also throw out the authority of the religious process. So therefore use a speculative religious process. In other words, the modern, what you see in the contemporary world. But that they're using some kind of process, that they're willing to accept values and norms, that's good. But it's just why ones we've made up rather than ones that are given by authority, by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Right? And then we have that, why not that's for the purpose of bhakti? Right? So in other words, you keep what's there and move it forward. Does that make sense? So that's his point here. That's the true critic. Like that. Because the, what was the other critic called?
Shallow.
The shallow critic. Yes. Okay, the true critic, on the other hand, advises us to preserve what we have already obtained. In other words, and how do you define what you've obtained? It has to be by authority. It has to be from the Shastra. Because otherwise, in the modern, you'll say, oh, we've attained this, but the problem is that standard keeps changing by the modes. So whatever is the standard today, tomorrow, you can't do that. So, therefore, you have to go by, what does Shastra say? That standard. That's then what you judge by. And keeping whatever is there, it doesn't matter what it is, it's all part of Krishna's creation. So it will always have elements of proper Krishna consciousness within it. Though its motive and all the other thing may be wrong, but there's something, some shell is there. And you take that. So in other words, if you're shallow, you can only see the shell, so that you just throw it out. But if the true critic can see what's the depth, what's behind it, what's the Shastra behind what they're doing. Okay. And to adjust our race from that point where we have arrived in the heat of our progress. He will never advise us to go back to the point whence we started, as he fully knows that in that case it will be a fruitless loss of our valuable time and labor. He will direct the adjustment of the angle of the race at the point where we are. Right there. Not move over to the line, then go forward. Because the point is to move over the line means you know what the line is. The line only is the line if you know what the goal is. So therefore, if you already show from the point they are the goal, you're going in the right direction. Right? This is also the characteristic of the useful student. He will read an old author and will find out his exact position in the progress of thought. He will never propose to burn the book on the ground that it contains thoughts which are useless. Yeah, this probably would have been good at, how you say it, Alexandria. No thought is useless, right? Because the thought has a basis to it. So it means the form that the thought that's there, you have to see what's value. It means the attitude's right, but the form's wrong. The form's right, the attitude's wrong. We have to just see what is there. So you have to see what's the essence of that. Why? Because as we mentioned before, Krishna is the value. So why someone's talking in a certain way? What's the value? Why are they talking that way? That's what you have to catch. Catching that, then you deal with the essence. Okay? No thought is useless. Thoughts are means by which we attain our objects. Right? So he doesn't mean the particular thought. It means the thought itself in its completeness. No. No thought is useless means some part is good, some part's not. You take that which is good, the part that's not, you leave. Though thoughts are means by which we attain our objects. The reader who denounces a bad thought does not know that a bad road is even capable of improvement and conversion into a good one. The thing is, a bad road, just get rid of it. Right? Like that. You know, so it's a good example is the Mayapur to Calcutta road. Even though it could be the worst road in the world, it is capable of fixing it. Like that. You know. Albeit it's only for 3 or 4 months, but, you know, they can fix it. Yeah. Thoughts will necessarily continue to be an endless series of means and objects in the progress of humanity. Right? So as long as the ultimate goal is Krishna, then these intermediate goals that are there will be useful. The great reformers will always assert that they have come out not to destroy the old law, but to fulfill it. Right? Like you see saying there, you know, in Jesus, he's coming. He's not getting rid of Judaism. He's trying to get them to adjust their mentality that's a little bit more about God and less about just ritual. You're right, and in that, then you'll include the followers and that, and you know you'll deal nicely. So he's not throwing it out. That's why people, you know, appreciate still follow. But if you're just throwing things out, then you know who knows these people. So, you know. Valmiki, Vyas, Plato, Jesus, Muhammad, Confucius, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu assert the fact either expressly or by their conduct. So you see, they would try to establish the old law in a contemporary environment. So that's the true critic. Right? And then the true student, then he will appreciate that. Therefore, he will then try to follow. Yeah? Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Shri Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jainita Gaura Prabhupada ki